right. Good morning, everybody. Today is November 18, Friday, and this is the Land Use and Sustainability Committee meeting. I'm joined by my colleagues, Vice Mayor Fernandez and Commissioner Richardson. Good to see you gentlemen this morning. Do we have anybody on Zoom?
We do not yet.
Okay. If one of our colleagues joins, please
let me know. I'll let you know, yes.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Any requests for deferrals?
None that I'm aware of.
Okay. I've been asked to take a couple of things out of order, so colleagues, if you're okay with it, we're going to take items 7, 2, and 1 in that order first, because Commissioner Fernandez may have to leave early, so I want to make sure we get to his items. Okay? Okay. Commissioner Fernandez, you want to take item 7 first?
Yes, sure.
Okay, you want to tee it up?
Yes. So item 7 has to do with the pedestrianization of the 200 and 300 blocks of Lincoln Road and about limiting the vehicular access on the 100 blocks. And colleagues, you are familiar with the efforts that we're trying to do here. We're re-energizing this area, removing cars, replacing cars with people, and creating more space for there to be good business activity, helping the commercial spaces there attract better tenants, and ultimately completing the vision that Morris Lapidus had when he worked on the redesign of Lincoln Road. This is going to be a game changer for this area, creating this this plaza and just continuing what ends on Washington Avenue. I don't want to say that anything bad about these two blocks, other than it could be better. It's Lincoln Road, and Lincoln Road is beautiful. It is a gem in our city. But these last few blocks, as we get close to the ocean, they should be the red carpet and the grand entry into the sands of Miami Beach, into our beaches. And right now, it's not that grand entry. And so we need to help elevate it. We need to help enhance it. And we need to help drive good activity there. And that's what this item is about. There's still work to be done, more work to be done with our transportation department and the other departments here in the city. We're working and having a meeting with the Department of Transportation and Public Works at the county as well. But I'd love for us to send a recommendation to the city commission, giving authority to finalize traffic circulation study together with our private partner over at the Ritz-Carlton, who's covering the soft costs for all of this stuff, and verify construction costs and make sure that we are working on a solid development agreement that could be later on presented to the city commission.
Okay. Commissioner Richardson?
I want to hear from staff. Who in transportation? Jose? If that's okay with you, Chair.
Yeah, of course.
Where are we on this? traffic, transportation, and your department?
Yeah, sure. Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. Jose Gonzalez, Transportation and Mobility Director. So we've received a preliminary traffic study from the developer's traffic engineer. We're going to be working off of that study. We're going to be meeting with the traffic engineer on behalf of the developer, reviewing the study, making whatever changes need to be made. It's going to be peer-reviewed by one of our consultants that we have currently engaged for these types of tasks, and we'll be expediting that process.
And is that both traffic? So I think I said the other day in the meeting that this is a little different from the rest of Lincoln Road. I like the concept a lot, but this between Lincoln Road at Washington, well, at Washington you've got two lanes of traffic in each direction, which every other street that crosses over Lincoln Road is really two lanes, one in each direction. So it's a little bit different, and there's some transit activity there. So is your meeting going to be about both traffic flow and public transportation?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, transit is a very important consideration in this project, because that bus stop that's located on the south side of Lincoln Road between Washington and Collins in front of the CVS is the busiest bus stop that we have in the city, with thousands of riders that use that stop daily.
You said the busiest in the city?
In the city. That is correct.
And
in terms of
does
volumes.
Mr. Larkin, did your firm engage the traffic study for the for your client?
Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Yes, Commissioner. We've engaged Kimberly Horn to be our traffic engineers, and they are moving forward with a preliminary study. We're very pleased to work with the Transportation Department here, but it's an approach that also requires work with Miami-Dade Transit, because they're in charge of the bus routes. So through Commissioner Fernandez, we'll be facilitating a meeting with Commissioner Higgins. This is within her district, and she'll be facilitating meetings with the appropriate county staff. But we feel that there's a path forward.
How long is all this going to take?
You said
it was in progress. I thought it was completed. So the study's in progress?
Right. It's in progress.
Okay. And do we have a timeline on that?
Let me guess, Adrian.
Good morning. Adrian Dubkowski with Kimley Horn. Office is at 355 Alhambra Circle in Coral Gables. The schedule on the traffic study is we have a preliminary methodology as well as the preliminary traffic assessment that have been submitted to the city. We're working with the city on finalizing that methodology and then moving forward with the data collection. Typically, a traffic study of this scale would take anywhere from 10 to 12 weeks once we have the methodology approved by the city.
And you said traffic, but are you also working on public transit or not?
Correct.
Okay,
that's a major component of this. We've pulled the ridership data. We've looked at the bus stop schedules and how to realign those on Washington Avenue so that the bus stops work and that the buses aren't conflicting with the traveling public.
Okay. And do you agree with our staff that this is apparently the busiest bus stop in the city?
We haven't gone through all the data yet, but it appears that it is.
Okay. So to the sponsor, you said you wanted to move it out. I'm very supportive of this and I want to see it happen, but I would rather keep it here until we get through this whole study phase. Cause I don't know that our staff can do anything in terms of, negotiating or anything. But Mr. Larkin,
we can do both approaches, Commissioner. What I would ask is that this committee, just like Finance Committee, would adopt a motion that would authorize the city administration to enter negotiations with us with regard to the development agreement. As we make progress on the traffic study, we can share that progress with you on a monthly basis as the Land Use Committee, where it's appropriate to hear that type of testimony. But we just don't want to be delayed and not start negotiating the development agreement until such time as the traffic study is complete. I'd rather work with the city administration on the development agreement and then share with you the data as it becomes available in our traffic study.
But how are they going to negotiate a development agreement until the traffic study's done?
The development agreement's really, it would be contingent upon the ultimate closure of the 200 and 300 blocks. But what we would be negotiating with the development agreement, you know, is the phased approach I told you about, that we are responsible for the soft cost, the city's responsible for the hard cost, and then we will come in the back end and manage it. That's in a very basic scope. That's what Robert Winnett did, the 1100 block. But I'm just giving you the very basic. There's a lot of the devil's in the details, and that's a lot of time to negotiate those details.
Yeah. So we would still see this at the commission, right? Development agreement, the development agreement would have to, well, first of all, it's going to have to go back to the commission to even have them enter into discussions and negotiations, right?
Correct.
And then we would see the final proposed development agreement back again, right, Eric?
Yeah, anything that was of this magnitude would have not only a direction to begin the process, but then we would have to look at the details of the process and you'd have to approve it again at that point.
Yeah. And the other thing is, as chair of finance, I can tell you I don't have the money right now. So,
unfunded.
Yeah. Do we know even how much this would cost? Are we talking about $10 million? What are we talking about?
$22 million for the hard cost, then you add a contingency and it goes up to about 24.
$24 million.
But we are looking at the city center CRA as a possible source of funding. We've hired an economist that is going to prepare a study in the very short term that will give the future revenue growth of the particular this CRA. And look, the CRA has been used multiple times to fund improvements to Lincoln Road starting in 2008. 2018, $20 million was taken from the CRA to fund presumably the James Corner Master Plan. You know, it's amended often to account for projects within the boundaries of the CRA, and we think that we could work a deal with the city administration, you all as the elected officials, and the county in order to further amend the city center CRA to provide funding.
Yeah, so I'm not opposed to moving it out if we're going to get to see it again. So,
great, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I love the concept. I think it would be, a good idea. My main challenge will be the money part of mm-hmm. it, you know, and
yep.
that,
yes, sir.
You know, it's worth trying, see where this goes, but, you know, the money might be a substantial hurdle considering, you know, we still have to actually do the work on the rest of Lincoln Road, and looks like we're underfunded for that as well, so.
And also, if you'll allow me, that I'm short about $50 million right now on other capital projects, yeah. So I need to find that 50 first, and then another 24, so.
Well, the Arts and Culture Bond, thankfully, Mr. Ariola pushed that forward, and you've talked about reallocating funds now to address your needs, your capital needs. So I think if you push forward and you hope for the best and you really give it your best efforts, things do fall into place.
So, Mr. Chair, what I would like to do is make a motion recommending this back to the City Commission, asking that the administration finalize that traffic circulation study and the peer review associated with it, verify construction costs, work on that development agreement, and of course, purchase some Miracle-Gro for the money tree.
Perfect. I'll second the motion.
Okay.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Okay.
Thank you.
Great. All right, let's move to item number two. This is yours, Commissioner Fernandez.
Yes, let me see item number two. Item number two, okay, Ferry Lane.
Not controversial at all.
Not controversial at all. And I'll leave this up to the will of this body. Let me just present this for purposes of the public. This is a proposed overlay to do regulations to protect the character, the low scale residential character of Century Lane, of Ferry Lane. Just off of the Venetian Causeway. I think probably a lot of individuals may have noticed out of character new construction sprouting in the neighborhood over there. And certainly we want to make sure that we have opportunity for new construction, opportunity for resilient homes, but that at the same time they be contextual to the neighborhood, that they not be out of scale with the homes around them. And so that's what this overlay aims to do, preserve the low-scale residential character of the neighborhood, promote resilience, limit heights of single-family homes, increase setbacks, and limit the maximum lot aggregation. I know that this could potentially be a controversial item, and I think that there is work to be done with the neighbors' feedback to receive from them and see how we can find some common ground here. If you guys want to discuss this today, we can discuss this, or we can continue it to next month so I can have some dialogue with the neighbors. I don't know if there's any feedback you would like to give me before I dialogue with them.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions. So.
Sure.
I noticed you said to keep in with the low scale of the neighborhood, but almost everything there is a high rise. The standard is low, so I don't know. You know, if to legal, if I owned a piece of property there, and then someone said I bought and I paid X amount of dollars for it, and then suddenly I can't do what I thought I was going to do. You know, it might have a financial impact. And so I don't know what the legal terms, but I think I've heard the word taking and used in the past. So has legal looked at this?
And I'm happy to address it. It may also be helpful for the committee to hear a brief presentation from
from staff on what the ordinance does, but I'm happy to address that. We believe that the commission has the authority to adopt what are essentially text amendments to the RM1 district regulations as far as height and setbacks. That said, we've been advised by at least three property owners that I'm aware of who object to the proposal, and I know I've spoken with at least one attorney whose client is considering filing a claim under the Harris Act if this does move forward, which is a statutory cause of action that's a lower burden for a claimant challenging an action of government that impacts the use of their property. So there is exposure here, but we believe you have the authority to have this policy discussion.
And that's a state law?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd like to hear from staff if we could do that.
You want to do a presentation on this?
Sure, I can start just as Commissioner Richardson mentioned. Starting with the history, going back to Century and Ferry Lane, they were both originally developed in 1940 and 1941. And interestingly enough, all the homes were constructed by the same architect. And they were largely intact until the mid-1990s, when six of the homes on Century Lane were demolished to make way for the Vistas condo. And at that time, the FAR that was allowed was 2.0, with a maximum height of 60 feet. So when the Vistas was built, it was constructed with 48 residential units and 71 parking spaces. Since that time, the area was downzoned to the maximum FAR now, which is 1.25, and a maximum height of 55 feet. So what's remaining on Century Lane of the 12 original homes on Century Lane, only three remain that don't have development approvals in process or under construction. And of the original 14 homes on Ferry Lane, 10 homes remain which do not have approvals or starting construction. So just a brief summary of what the proposal does. It does lower the height down from 55 feet to 35 to 40 feet, with the requirement that the first 25 feet of building depth not be more than 24 feet tall or two stories. It does place a more limited list of allowable height exceptions. It does limit those exceptions up to a maximum of 10 feet. This is something that typically, although this is a multifamily district, we're only seeing single-family homes constructed. There's no need for anybody to go more than 10 feet for an elevator or stairwell bulkhead. It does limit the roof decks to a setback, or does require a setback of 5 feet. It does require some additional requirements for lot aggregation. For example, if two lots are aggregated, it requires a courtyard at street level to sort of reflect the original pattern of development of the individual lots. It does, in order to accommodate the FAR, we're not reducing the FAR from 1.25, but in order to accommodate that reduction in height, we are suggesting a reduction in setbacks. Right now, the code requires a 20-foot front setback and 7.5 feet on the sides. So we're suggesting a 10-foot front setback and 5-foot side setback to allow the same 1.25 FAR within a lower building height. It also includes some minimum standards for the non-habitable ground floor, as well as some design and resiliency standards as listed in the code. That's basically it.
Commissioner Fernandez, let me ask you, why are you doing this? What problem are you thinking needs to be solved? And not to put you on the spot, but before I sort of give you my thoughts, I'm just trying to see what's the approach here. What are we trying to cure? What problem are we looking to solve?
Sure. Property owners in the area have contacted me on this north part of the Venetian Causeway that is defined by lower scale construction, concerned with some of the new homes that are out of scale with the homes that have traditionally characterized that area. Clearly, those homes had the right to be built at that height, and it was almost, from the way it's been described to me, almost a flaw, an unintended flaw in the code that now you have these heights on those lots, and so this just seeks to correct that. Of course, we want to promote resilient homes and give individuals the opportunity to build new on their lots. But I think also, not everything in our city, not every new home has to be an incredibly large home. It could still be contextual to the area. So that's what I'm trying to solve, making sure that the new constructions are not out of scale and don't stand out. I first noticed it when I went through the Venetian Causeway and I saw a large five-story building that stuck out like a sore thumb. All of a sudden, it just pops out at you, and it really is out of scale, especially when you have a small one-story home right next to it. And it's not the only five-story property that's being developed in the area. So I think it's just putting some modest regulations in place that still accommodate the current maximum FAR allowed for the site, just reducing the massing of the new construction on these lots that front Century and Ferry Lane.
Fair enough. Okay. Are there folks from the public that want to speak on this? I'm sure there's people on both sides. Come on up.
Can I ask a question, yes, staff, first? Let me ask staff. What is there's a new, I don't think they're condos, I think it's an apartment on the east side that's going up east of the, what is the height of, what's the permitted height of that building?
That was permitted when the maximum height was 50 feet.
50.
Right.
I'm sorry? 55? Okay. Okay, thanks.
And Mr. Chairman, I have a few callers on Zoom, too. Okay. So
great. We'll get to them. You want to come on up?
Morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
My name's Joanna Ferrone. I own a home on Ferry Lane, 9 Ferry Lane. Bought it about 13 years ago. I'm obviously retirement age. This home is my largest asset by far. And basically when I bought, I did so with the understanding that I was buying a five-story zoned residence and valued it accordingly. I have personally no interest in building a five-story home. I'm in some agreement with Commissioner Fernandez that the five-story homes that have gone up on Century Lane are kind of sore thumbs. That said, I do not think that it's fair or proper that by caveat the value of my biggest asset be reduced by what would amount to 3/5. I just don't think that's right. Someone just bought recently on Ferry Lane, and I'm sure that they had the same factors in mind when they considered what they would pay for their home. It's not in my personal judgment that having big homes is necessarily better than the lovely, charming character of the current neighborhood that has since been and recently been disrupted by the building of the Haddad, which I objected to, not because I don't love the rabbi and what those guys are up to, but I didn't want this big behemoth on Ferry Lane. That said, the cat is out of the bag. The cat's out of the bag on Century Lane. I think it's kind of crazy at this point to say that based on aesthetics, it's going to be okay to have a few big things sticking up, but not the rest of them. Actually, at this point, I think the better look would be for everything to be big. That said, I'm going to apply. I've got plans in the works to apply for a two-story home. I'd like to add a floor to my existing house. I'm not here to say that I want a five-story home, and that's my reason for coming to you. It's just I don't want the value of my biggest asset to be torpedoed like this. If the people across the street on Island Avenue, who I believe are the ones who would benefit from the reduction in height of our residences because it would not obscure their view. And ultimately, I think that's the reason for this motion to be brought. You know, if all of a sudden you were to say to them, well, you know, we've approved a building going up in your lovely park, that would impact the value of their homes considerably. And I would be just as much against that as I am against this. I know there are more of them than there are of us. But still, you know, what's right is right. We, the owners on Ferry Lane and Century Lane, were not even notified about this hearing. I received nothing. A neighbor of mine happened to have found out about it. I don't know how. And the word spread. I do know that almost all of us, if not all of us, are opposed to this. Why? Because, you know, you're saying you paid a dollar for something, and now we're going to reduce its value to 50 cents or whatever. It's just not right. It's not fair, and it's not right. Okay. So, you know, that's pretty much all I have to say on the subject. I sympathize with the whole aesthetic notion, but that cat is out of the bag.
Got it.
You're not going to have Century Lane owners who just put up the five stories and have plans to put up another one take down their buildings. You're not going to have the Haddad take down its building. You're not going to have the building that took over Belle Isle apartments, which were charming and beautiful and you know, afforded living options for people with you know, tighter budgets.
I want to stay on time. I apologize. I'll let you go over because I think what you're saying is, I'll preserve my comments, but I think what you read into the record is something that a lot of homeowners face, not just in your part of the neighborhood, but throughout our city whenever these kinds of issues come up. And I'll sort of get to my points after we take more comment, but thank you.
Okay. I'll wrap it up. Yeah. I'm just saying you're not going to have these other people now lower the height of their buildings.
But you're saying on your particular street, most of your neighbors are of your opinion?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So it's interesting, right?
Nobody wants
the value we'll get to it. So
property.
The people that are affected don't want something to restrict their property rights, and it's typically an outside group who doesn't have the economic vested interest that you and your neighbors do that are trying to impose their will. So this is
they
the conflict
interest,
that
just
we
like
get.
When they said no buses on that side of Island Avenue, that the buses have to come on our street. No. That's fine. Whatever.
This is what makes our job so difficult is that we're going to get two parties that just do not see eye to eye on a particular issue, and then we have to arbitrate and try to find the happy medium, and we end up pissing somebody off. So
Well, we're talking about the people on the lower floors on the other side.
I got you. Okay. So there are other people who want to speak, but thank you for your time
guys.
And comments. Thank you.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Commission. My name is Nathan Lieberman. I'm the owner of 12 Ferry Lane. I purchased the house this year in 2022 for $1.4 million. It is a tiny little bungalow. I think it's under 1,200 square feet. So that is, you know, an astronomical figure per square foot. I purchased it obviously with the intent that either I would build, you know, a townhouse on the property or that I'd be able to, you know, sell that property to someone else in the future that would do the same. So I'm against, obviously, lowering the value of my property, downzoning, et cetera, from where we're at. I also think that, you know, changing the setbacks to make things even tighter in that neighborhood and lowering it, tightening it would make it even, you know, worse off. So that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
Good morning. I want to apologize first of all because my English is not my first language, but I am the owner of 11 Century Lane. My name is Gabriel Valenzuela. I am one of the developers. We built my house already. It's 45 feet and 6 inch. So we got that permit because we own 10 Century Lane and 11 Century Lane. So the idea, if the board denies, was to not build a single family home, but multifamily home in, by rights. So we have a lot of problems building this house because our neighbors in Vistas. It's very difficult to build. I spent my last year over there every year. So we submit a new construction for 10 Century Lane. We learn if without variances, there is no neighbors that can oppose. And we withdraw. We withdraw the submittal because it's very difficult, that lane. And we have in 9th, 7th Century Lane, two elderly neighbors, and one of them is in critical condition, and for sure the new construction will be like affected them. So we withdraw, we sold that property, not to build, and right now there is people trying to build like a massive, even higher than our house. So people ask, why if you have like a five-story single home and you fought for that, now you're opposing, is just because of that. It's like, it's difficult to build there. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else from the public here who want to speak? Okay, come on up. And then we have some Zoom callers.
Yes, I have five hands up on Zoom.
Okay. Come on up.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is David Sachs. Law offices of Patham, Shermer, Tandy, 2 South Biscayne Boulevard. I'm here today representing the owners of 6 and 7 Ferry Lane, who are against the ordinance as presented right now. Having said that, I'd also like to point out what Ms. Johanna Ferrone said a little bit earlier, both to us outside and before you today, was that a lot of her neighbors were never contacted. I think you would have a lot more people here today if that were the case, had they had notice, other than by neighbors. But with regards to my presentation, I think we should start with, you know, from the macro to the micro. In other words, you know, we should put things, and we have with us today from RPC, Architects and Designers, Javier Fromazone and James McDonald, who, if you would like, they can say a few words and, you know, to add to the competent substantial evidence,
yeah,
if you will.
I'll try to, you know, just, we're trying to run a meeting, so.
But we're here.
If you need a couple extra minutes for presentation, I'll grant it, or, you know, I'll give you each 2 minutes and use it up. I mean, if you have something that you want to show us that would be useful to us as we try to understand this issue better, feel free to present it.
Understandable. And just so everyone knows, we're in agreement with page 203 of the staff report, which concludes that additional refinement to this legislation is necessary. So I'm talking about a little bit of a workshop, perhaps, a little bit of a few things that you may not be aware of today. It's always those unintended consequences. And Michael said a little bit earlier on another project with Ocean Terrace, the devil is in the details. So let's get the devil out today and make this as effective a day as we possibly can moving forward. So as I mentioned, we agree with that staff report. That
you're going to run out of time. How much more time do you need?
It needs more refinement. As well as there are various sections of the proposed ordinance that our architects can get to, if you would so be like that. I do want to mention I forgot to put in context that a supermajority of the owners on both Century and Ferry Lanes are not in favor of this project. We've met, but we've been told that, and I just want you to be aware of that in that macro sense. But to narrow it down, I want you to keep in mind two things. The standard that is going up and our client's property, which is waterfront property. And I'm not just talking about our client, because this is not a spot zoning discussion. This is about a broader area of waterfront properties. More specifically, single-family homes that will clearly be overshadowed by this particular ordinance in its current form. So I think those, what I just said, were a couple areas of fertile ground for you to consider, given that my time is limited here. And Again, we would like to put on our architects with respect to the specific sections that are in today's packet, if you would like to entertain that. Thank you.
Let's see if we get there.
Okay.
Sure. Thank you. Anybody else here from the public?
Mr. Chair, if I may, I want to thank the chair because, to Mr. Sachs' point, the chair, I think, had an item on the agenda to work on the commission agenda to correct the issue on notice so that when we have ordinances like this that do affect property owners, that these tax amendments do get notified to the property owners. It's only fair. And so, Mr. Chairman, thank you for referring that to committee. We have to do that, and we have to improve on it.
Yep. Great. Morning.
Good morning. Ethan Wasserman with Greenberg Charg, 333 Southeast 2nd Avenue, here on behalf of Foxman Tilton LLC, the owner of 7th Century Lane. So my client owns the waterfront site on 7th Century Lane. He bought this site about 15 years ago with the intention of redeveloping it in his retirement, and I think the neighbor on Ferry Lane spoke very well about the issues before you this morning. When he bought it, the zoning and the context of the street was already 50 feet and five stories. The Vistas runs the entire length of Century Lane. What's happened since then is one of the homes have gone up for 50 feet on the eastern side of Century Lane, and there is another home on the waterfront that's in for DRB review that has projected to be about 50 feet. So what could happen is my client would be sandwiched on the waterfront between a 50-foot and a 50-foot. I don't think that was the intended result. I think the legislation was well-intended, but we just wanted to bring that out to your attention this morning, that I think there's a little more work that could be done on it if you all bring it back. Thank you.
Anyone else from the public that's here? Mr. Larkin?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Commissioners Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard. Here is Steve and Jessica Rhodes. They own on 8 Ferry Lane, which are right next door to Joanne on the waterfront. We're here introducing an applicability clause. That's one path forward that you could take for this legislation, is as long as the owners satisfy certain benchmarks, then they would be exempt from the legislation. We have an example applicability clause that my colleague Nick could pass out to you all. It could be broadened. Another example of something that is not what we did, but it could say that as long as you file an application by January and get your approval by the DRB by May, then you would be also exempt from this legislation. It's important to note that the roads already have an application in the pipeline, that they went forward in 2016 and got an approval, came back in 2018 for modifications. They chose not to go forward that design. In 2021, they went forward again and filed an application. They ultimately withdrew it in March of this year because they didn't want their neighbors in Ferry Lane to experience the inconvenience of their construction while the Chabad is under construction as well, so they withdrew it as a courtesy. But now they're back, and we're proffering this applicability clause. Again, this is one path forward for this legislation. So thank you very much for your time.
Okay, anybody else? Want to come on?
Good morning. Javier Freimson, RPC Holdings, Wells Fargo Center in downtown Miami. I'm here representing, as well, the properties of 6 Ferry Lane and 7 Ferry Lane, and we're looking at the proposed code changes and the implications of it into the whole zoning. We completely agree with the staff that mentioned that the applicability of it on height alone, just because of the flood zone. So the low scale is not attainable and sustainable on the site, and that's without counting all the houses that are going up, right? So right now, with the houses being permitted, over 60% of the properties on both Century Lane and Ferry Lane, they're already up to 50 feet. Having said that, the new homes or the existing homes don't comply with the zoning code. Whenever you want to build something, you have to raise everything up. You're going to end up with understories in these homes for flood and resilience. So the low scale is really not attainable for the new properties. Besides that, the code, as I said, also the staff, agreeing with the staff, is too restrictive and prescriptive on the architecture and the design components of the new properties. So we think that that needs to be tweaked as well as proposed by staff. And we can go into details. The properties for example, are very small. They're on average like 3,000 square feet. They're like 50 feet deep, between 40 and 60 feet deep. So if you read the code and you talk about the height, the first 25 feet of the home has to be, you know, 24 feet to levels, and then you can go high if it's approved. But really, you're left with no home after that because they're so shallow. So all of those components makes really the properties or the new homes not really viable as it's on the code as proposed.
Thank you. Okay. Sir? Okay. First Zoom caller?
Sure. Our first Zoom caller is Maurizio Parlato. You have 2 minutes.
Good morning. Good morning. Marie?
Maurizio, can you...
Good morning. Can you see us?
Good morning. No. We can hear you, yes.
Okay, I just wanted to introduce Maurizio has lended us to Maria Urgate, this computer, because she doesn't have internet available to her. So she is a lady that lives in... can she speak in Spanish?
What's her name? You have
Spanish?
I mean, does somebody speak Spanish?
If that's the only way, yes, they can speak in Spanish,
and
we'll try to between Commissioner Fernandez and I, we can try to translate. And we have a translating service, no?
I don't know, folks watching at home. I don't think we do, but if we have advance notice, we may be able to arrange that. But I don't think on the spot.
Okay. Well, why don't we do this? Go ahead. If she wants to speak Spanish, she can speak Spanish, and if this item comes up again, which I think it will, we'll have a translating service for her if she wants to speak again.
Okay. My name is Mario Garte. I live in 9th Century Lane. I bought the house in 1980-something. You can find my record in the Lake County where I pay my taxes. This part of the island, I have Century Lane. I don't live in Century Lane. I live on one side of Century Lane in an alley. Three houses. Right now, nobody can go to my house. I have problem with the city all the time. I'm old. I'm 90 years old. My sister is sick. And I would like the city to help me, please. I want to know the property in my house. What is the property in my house? And it's an alley, it's a hall going to live. And they have three houses. And we only have problem. Okay? We only have problem. I don't know what I want to do. It's the hall, no space for anything. What can I do now in my house? Nobody called me, no doctor, no friend, no nobody to help me. They call the city all the time. I would like this, that I pay my taxes every year for the Dade County, for the internal revenue, everything. I don't write anything in my house. And I want to tell you now, in the construction, that my house doesn't appear. I don't exist. The map that they gave the city, I don't exist. Only people made help me, and I appear over there. They fixed the picture. That is a mistake. I told it to a commissioner over there. That's something illegal for me. Okay, I have the condominium here. I was here when we construction the condominium.
Okay, thank you. Time's up. Next caller.
Our next caller is Kara G. Kara, you have 2 minutes.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Kara Glazer. I live on Century Lane, and I support the overlay in some form, as the zoning is there to protect and preserve the character and the scale of the neighborhood, as well as the quality of life. And if you read through RM1, it feels as though it doesn't actually ever address single family homes. And everywhere else in Miami, single family homes are limited to elevation plus two stories. And that's not the case here. And as many of the landowners know, their lot sizes don't even meet the minimum lot size for consideration of the buildings under RM1. And so it feels like it was an oversight when the zoning was put in place, as no one ever thought that these tiny lots would be allowed to erect a five-story house. And if you drive by, you know, what's being put up is a monstrosity in comparison to the neighborhood, including the standards and the vistas. And, you know, the proposed future ones are probably going to be higher than that. And if you come down while this construction is happening, the quality of life of people on Century Lane, and I'm sure Ferry Lane with the construction that's happening there, you can't get up and down the road. People can't get their kids to school. People can't get to work. It's consistently blocked and dirty, and the interruptions and the vibrations of the building. You know, the quality of life is just suffering for the people that live there day to day. And then, not to mention, you know, the broader picture of what's happening on Belle Isle right now with the lane closures, the suit that are going to happen for the next year, the dangerous intersection in front of Century Lane and Venetian Way, the replacement of the infrastructure for sewer and water that's failing, the bridges on Venetian Way that are going to have to be replaced in the next few years due to failing infrastructure. So, you know, if we continue to allow these giant buildings to be constructed, it's just going to continue to deteriorate at a faster rate.
Your two minutes are already suffering.
Thank you.
Our next caller is Scott Diffenderfer. Scott, you have 2 minutes.
Hi, thank you. My name is Scott Diffenderfer. I live in 9 Island Avenue. I'm calling, you know, I've been watching this. I used to be president of the Neighborhood Association, and years ago when this zoning was created, nobody dreamed, as Kara said, that anybody would try to put a five-story single-family home on a 3,500 or less square foot lot. It's really frustrating. I've spoken to city staff over the years, and nobody would address the fact, the fire department, public safety, all this other stuff that has a zillion regulations, that these streets are not standard width. There are no swales. There are no sidewalks. There are not proper turnaround lanes. These houses don't even have places for people to park when they have guests. And so here we are building five stories, where in other lots in the city where we have 18,000 and 20,000 square foot lots, and they want to go up to 45 feet, we say, oh, what about how close it is to the neighbors and you're ruining their privacy? This zoning is so bad, and it was a complete oversight, and the fact that no one's addressed it just pisses me off, and now's the time to do something about it. We're also looking at a hotel where you're going to have single-family homes now looming over a pool. So I would like everybody to look around the city and see that we basically have three types of architecture. We have this iconic or new exciting architecture that make people say, wow. Then there's stuff that just fits in, and it doesn't make you think about it one way or another. And then you have houses like this that any normal person drives by and says, how the hell were they allowed to build that on such a tiny lot? So that's all I'm saying. It's one thing to allow them to build because there's hardship, but to allow them to go five stories up with no swales, no sidewalks, no landscaping, it just doesn't make any sense. Thank you.
Okay. Our next caller is Wayne Roberts. Wayne, you have 2 minutes.
I think the first woman said it best. She's a resident who luckily bought into a property that the developers figured a loophole. Just like I don't like upzoning without really, really good reasons that aren't PAC-led driven economics alone, I don't believe it's the right of the city to take away profits from a person that, even though it was an oversight, even though it was a mistake, developers figured a way to convert that property into something it really wasn't intended for. And at this point, the cat is out of the bag. But I think it's a good thing to review policy across Miami Beach that, you know, that intentionally upzoning property and the impact to residents, the impact to Miami Beach, the impact to environmental and infrastructure, this is a perfect example of why upzoning or density or height or FAR, whatever you want to call it, is counterproductive for the residents of Miami Beach, unless there's a really, really, really good reason other than PAC-led developers controlling our government. Thank you very much.
Our next caller is Olivia. Olivia, you have 2 minutes.
Good morning. Good morning. So I'm a resident of Belle Isle Islands, and I've been one of the families affected with the construction of this terrible monster at this small lane. That is a lane. It's not a street. Like the gentleman said before, there's no landscaping or sidewalk, etc. So zoning overlays happens all the time everywhere else in Miami. Single family homes are maximum should be 2 floors, especially on an island that is small such as ours. And we've been owning and investing since 1999 in this island, knowing that loving the charm of the two stories and single stories. And now with all of this monsters building around us 50 feet high, we are totally not going to be able to see the sky and forget about the water. So then there's one family who are going to enjoy all of the views and everything, and then other 1,000-plus families are going to be cut out of the view or the sun or natural light. So we're all going to be living in a dungeon. I mean, how is that fair? So that's all what I wanted to say. And then when they were building this monster, I had a surgery that I had to really be in peace, and I couldn't even be in peace in my own house. That for 4 months I had to rent on Ocean Drive an apartment to heal from the removal of that cancer that I had in that time. So I think with those two ladies in that lane that are constantly harassed by those this couple that wants to build now 2 huge other monsters, and that they have presented to the city the plans without showing the ladies Maria's and her sister's house.
They Olivia, made your like 2 minutes are up.
Grass area, but it's completely not right. Okay.
Our next you. Caller is Wendy Moth. Wendy, you have 2 minutes.
Good morning, Wendy.
Good morning. Good morning. My name is Wendy Moth. I'm a resident of Century Lane, and I would just like to agree with everything that Cara and Scott said. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, that was our last caller.
Okay, great. All right. No other buddy from the public wants to address this. I'll bring it back up here then. Commissioner Fernandez, you're the sponsor. Do you have anything to add?
First and foremost, I want to thank everyone that has taken the time to come and speak on this, whether you're an affected person by the legislation or someone that's affected by the development that's happening on the island. I want to make sure that a middle ground is found that serves everyone well. I think there's work to be done. Clearly, this is not in a position to move forward at this point, but I want to be able to work with the neighbors, with all the neighbors on both sides, with their representatives as well, and hopefully, Mr. Chairman, continue this to January, and hopefully we can bring something a little bit more baked that can address the needs in a fair way for all the residents of the area.
Okay. Commissioner Richard?
Yeah, I would agree that you should continue the item because, you know, it's just not ready right now. You know, as the chair said, we're often put in this position of being the arbiters, the judges, because we got one group of people that want one thing and another group of people, and we're in a no-win situation, quite frankly. But, you know, I always try to put myself in the shoes of the affected parties on both sides. And, you know, if I had purchased a piece of property and assumed it has certain value, then I would expect that value. And, You know, I've also said, because we've had a number of times since I've been here where people are objecting simply because their view is going to be affected. And, you know, if you want your view, I remember we just had this, I think it was the Versailles near the Faena, right, where the condo across the street didn't want a new condo built on the water because their views would be affected. Well, why don't they buy that piece of property? And then they wouldn't have that problem. And so, you know, when you buy your property, you don't buy the view in front of you unless you buy that property. And I know that. I own a condo. Somebody could build a building next to me, and I would lose whatever view that I have. I think it's a telephone pole right now. But, you know, so I think this needs more work. I like the idea of having a workshop to see if the parties can come to some agreement. I understand with the proposal you'd have the same FAR, but I have real concerns about sustainability issues, because if you put a bigger footprint that's, you know, basically less ground to absorb, and especially these are small lanes, and, you know, quite frankly, I'm kind of surprised no developer bought those properties up 20 years ago and built another big condo on it, because the island's pretty much, at least on the south side, is all high-rise condos, right? And then the new apartment building that's going up, I think, is 55. So, you know, I think we have to be fair to all parties, and I think this needs more work.
Yeah, I'll just add, so we're, you know, these are among the most challenging types of issues that we have to weigh in on. You know, on one side, for me, you know, this is America, and people have property rights, and that's one of our foundational tenets, and, you know, we should not, you know, infringe on those property rights. So, you know, I tend to be pretty strong on that matter. The other side, though, is, you know, people, you know, buy into a community, into a neighborhood, you know, and, you know, that's what they're buying into. And then all of a sudden, if that character of the neighborhood changes, you know, it affects their property rights, their quality of life. So that's something to, you know, taken seriously as well. I mean, this particular area, I love. You know, those bungalows are very charming. I think they added the character of the city and the neighborhood. And, you know, I'm sad to see it changing, but, you know, people do have property rights. So, you know, I want to support property rights. And, you know, hopefully we can find some middle ground here. Nobody's going to come out of this totally happy, but hopefully we can find some middle ground here. Because, you know, these are tough issues. You know, times have changed. This neighborhood was built in the early 1940s. Climate change, sea level rise, property values, all of those things are coming to bear now, and this neighborhood looks like it's going to change, both because for resiliency purposes, and, you know, it's become a very desired neighborhood, and people want to, you know, take a, you know, small 1,200-square-foot bungalow, which in the 1940s was kind of a standard size, and people live in much larger homes these days. You know, Miami Beach at one time was a second, third home market. People, you know, spent their winters here, but now it's a year-round place where people want to live. They need bigger homes. So anyway, let's continue working with the neighborhood and see if we can find some middle ground. Do you want to lead the charge on this?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll continue working with the neighbors that spoke. If anyone from the area wants to reach out to me, my email is alex@miamibeachfl.gov. For those residents that don't know, we also have a residence right to know, so that whenever items like this come forward, you get notified in your email. You can sign up for that. This was listed as a resident right to know item, so that whoever signs up for notifications on this type of legislation, they would get notified. But please reach out to me, and I'll reach out to you guys as well. And we'll come back for this in January. Mr. Chair, I had to leave at 10:30. It's 10:38.
We had your item number one, which I think is going to take some time. Do you want to defer it?
That's my remaining items we can defer.
Your remaining items defer?
Yes.
Okay, so that's items one will be deferred. Items three, deferred?
Yep. And I think that's it for my, and we did number seven.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you, okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a good day.
Have a good weekend.
Let's see. I'm going to call up item number eight, which is the discussion about a property 7605 Collins Avenue. Who wants to introduce this? Betsy, you want to come up and? Okay.
Thanks.
Give you a minute. Michael, are you going to introduce this? Okay. And I don't know if someone from staff is going to do this as well. Number eight. I don't know who should go first. Would you like to go first? I know what the issue is, but I don't know how we want to tee it up.
So this is a proposal from the property owner at 7605 Collins Avenue. There is a single-family home at this location with RS4 zoning. That's RS zoning. It's single-family zoning. The property is surrounded by Altos Del Mar Park on the north and on the east. And so there has come a proposal from the property owner. They're either seeking to rezone the property. If the property is rezoned from anything other than RS, that would bring FAR to the property, and that would be subject to voter referendum per our charter requirements. The alternative proposal from the property owner is for the city to purchase the property, and they may provide some more specifics on that detail. Those are the two options presented. Staff just recommends that the planning board, that the Land Use and Sustainability Committee discuss the item and give us feedback on how to proceed.
So Michael Larkin, 200 South Biscayne Boulevard, representing Betsy and Rudy Perez. So Rogelio is right. There were the two options was a rezoning. I don't necessarily agree with the planning director and the city attorney's office that a rezoning from RS to CD2 RM1 does trigger a referendum. But in my discussion with the planning director earlier this week when we were debating that topic, he said, well, Michael, there is another path forward that I didn't think about when I was writing the staff recommendation, and that's to create an overlay zoning district here where it wouldn't incorporate FAR. It would be a single-family overlay, but it would be very broad and liberal in its scope, and you could have a hotel use in there, bed and breakfast use, or a restaurant use. And I think that based on the isolated nature of this property, I think that all those uses would be really good because you have CD2, so you have this particular isolated pocket, then you have the library site, then you have CD2 zoning, which is the back end of Ocean Terrace. So I'm not going to engage in the debate because I would have to appeal something to the Board of Adjustment. I would waste Betsy's time and money. I'd rather achieve the same goal by pursuing an overlay. The other option was a purchase this property by the city, but I don't know what funds and where they would come from. And Betsy and Rudy are just looking to protect their investment. They see the nature of the neighborhood changing rapidly, and they're just looking for a way forward which would protect their investment. So a rezoning could, but there are certain issues with that. So an overlay zone would be an appropriate tool to protect their investment. And I think Betsy also asked if she could address you all, if that's okay.
Good morning, Betsy.
Good morning. Betsy Perez, 7605 Collins. So I just want to go back in history about our home and how it came about. Back in the 50s when these homes were built, and some even before that, it was a neighborhood. Well, it eventually changed, and little by little, we were 40-year residents here, raised 5 kids here. And when we purchased our home 23 years ago, it looked a lot different in the neighborhood. Of course, it's changed, and North Beach has come a long way, and we realized that we've become an island on our own. We're all by ourselves. All the homes that were right around us are gone. And right now, as a home, as a residence, it doesn't make any sense for anyone to eventually, if we want to sell it. I mean, I love Miami Beach. I love where I live. But I also need to protect my children's future and my property rights. So hence, this is why I'm here. I'm here because I feel like everything's changed so much that I have to protect my investment.
Fair enough. You want to go?
Sure. Yeah, well, you probably know my thoughts on that because I had a proposal over a year ago to when we, you know, we're still planning to move the library, and that's really five different lots, and I want to take the back three and make a park and have the front two and have some sort of reasonable development there. And I always thought whoever did that would perhaps incorporate your – I do agree with you that you've sort of become a little island there, right, in that the rest of the homes are gone and you're just sort of sitting there. You know, if I had unlimited amounts of money, we would just – buy it, I think, and make it part of the park. But you probably were, well, I think you were sitting here when I said I need about $50 million right now for capital projects and now another $24 for Lincoln Road. And so I don't have the money to buy it. But I'm interested in this idea of an overlay. And do you think that can be done without a referendum?
Yes.
Because I mean, would that increase... would that increase the FAR?
No, couldn't.
And what is the height on the property right now that somebody could go? Is
30 feet roughly. It's RS4, so it's maybe it's a little bit lower than that for a pitched roof. Or where's Michael? 27 feet.
So, Madam Chair, I would like us to keep this here and get staff to work on this idea of an overlay. I'd like to see what that looks like, because I agree. This makes no sense that the house is just sort of sitting there. It's sort of like an island, right? It's a beautiful home, beautiful location, but it's probably not the best use of the land to have a single-family home there. It was whenever it was built years ago, but not today. Right. Mr. Larkin, can you work with staff to develop this concept of an overlay that they could bring back and we could all look at and see if we like that idea?
Yes, sir.
Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay, well, then let's do that.
Perfect. Great. Come back in December, sir?
We're not going to meet in December.
Okay.
So
we'll I guess it has to be January.
Huh?
January.
Yeah. Is that okay?
Yes, sir. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks.
And in the meantime, if while you're working on that, you know, staff and you all can reach out so we're not – looking at it for the first time at the meeting, right? Yeah. So if we have questions. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay. Is Commissioner Miner on Zoom by any chance? Because we have a number of his items here.
I don't see him. No.
So I'm not sure if we should tackle these or wait till he's here.
I think we need to wait for him. So
yeah, because I don't know enough about most of these. 4, 5, 6 are his. Okay, so we'll defer those and make sure when he's available, we'll hear those. We have item number 9, which is Commissioner Rosa Gonzalez. Is she on Zoom by any chance?
No, she's not.
Okay, so let's defer that one so that she can present it. We had, if you remember, on Wednesday when we had our commission meeting, Commissioner Richardson, we said that we would hear today from staff further presentation on the resiliency code and see if we can hash out a few of the remaining items. So I'm happy to see if we can make a little bit of progress there. We were rushed on Wednesday.
Can we just have staff remind us of what the two issues are that are open?
Yeah. I think I'll summarize, you know, Wednesday's meeting. The commission, I think maybe just one exception, even that one exception, was willing to adopt the resiliency code changes. But there were two sticking points for some of us, and I think one had to do with, you know, minimum unit size, and then what was the other one?
The understory.
The understory, yeah, I'm sorry. Yep. So do you want to tee it up,
Sure. I have a PowerPoint presentation. I just have four slides to share to go over.
Yeah, and I had asked you with the minimum unit size to just run some numbers to help, you know, sort of educate folks.
If you can go to the next slide, please. Okay, so this is what we have today. I'm showing here the RM1, RM2, and RM3 districts. The regulations are the same for the CD1, CD2, and CD3 districts, which are the most common districts in the city. And you can see on the second table, I have two sections. One is for market rate units, and one is for workforce affordable housing units. And I'm showing you what you can do today and what we're proposing. And so on the left of the table, you see the current and the proposed. So if you're doing an affordable or workforce housing unit today, you can go down to 400 square feet unit size. There's no average unit size, and you get a density bonus of 80% above what is allowed, which is RM1 is 60 units per acre, RM2 is 100 units per acre, RM3 is 150 units an acre. So if you're doing workforce affordable housing, that already exists, and we're not proposing any changes to that. For market rate units today, you can do unit sizes that are 550 square feet, which is which we're not proposing to change that. But what you do have to comply with today is an average minimum unit size of 800 square feet. We're proposing to remove the average minimum unit size, but we're not touching the actual minimum unit size.
Let me stop you there. That's an important distinction. I might have missed it on Wednesday, but I don't think we were as clear on that point as you're being here, because I think some folks might have thought that we were changing the minimum unit size down to 550. That already exists.
That already exists, yes.
So what we're changing is the average unit size, so that if you have some small units of 550, to get it up to 800 average, you'd have to build several large ones,
exactly,
which makes it less affordable, obviously, because then you're building 2,500, 3,000 square foot units in order to get the average up.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's the difference there. Yep. So if you can go to the next slide.
I want to make sure I understand that right. So the average, that means that you could have 100 units and they can be all different sizes.
Correct.
But the average of all of them together has to be 800. That's
correct.
The current.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the proposal would be that there would not be any average unit size?
Correct. It would just be, we would have that minimum. You couldn't go below 550 for a market rate unit, and we wouldn't calculate the average.
The smallest unit would be 550.
Correct. For a market rate unit, that's correct.
But you could do something greater than 550.
Correct. Correct. And by the way, these are separate from co-living. That's a whole separate use with its own requirements, and co-living or micro units as some people.
So it seems to me that's almost like an increase in unit size, because right now what could happen under the code is you could have some 300 square foot units and you could have like 1,200, but as long as they averaged 800, you could have the smaller ones, right?
No, you still no. Today you cannot go below 550 for a market rate.
Okay, you can't go below.
Both standards apply. Minimum 550, average 800.
See.
What we're proposing is that we only keep the minimum and remove the average.
Okay.
Why
are you proposing that change?
We think that provides developers a little bit of flexibility. It's not going to result in a huge increase in the number of units that they can build, but it gives them a little bit of flexibility if they do want to provide those smaller units that are more attainable and not have to provide such a large amount of luxury units if they so choose.
They could do a project that is entirely 550.
Correct.
You could do 100 apartments, 550,
mm-hmm.
and you wouldn't have to do some bigger ones to get to the average.
Correct. Or, you know, I think we're focusing so much on the lower threshold, or they can do a bunch of 700 square foot units and not have to then, for no other reason than just to get the average bump up, build a bunch of larger units. So, you know, I think, you know, some colleagues might have missed on Wednesday the fact that 550 already exists. Developers can, for market rate units, build 550. I think people
mm-hmm.
were thinking we were lowering the minimum unit size. That's not the case. What we're talking about, and it wasn't clear to me, so to be fair, the proposed change is just the average unit size calculation. Just take that out for market rate units.
That's correct.
And I think what was missed also on Wednesday, folks were focused on 550 being so small. Already, they can build 400 square foot units for affordable housing.
That's correct.
Right? I think all that subtlety was missed on Wednesday, so this is helpful.
Correct. So in the next slide I have, it's also in your packet.
And I hate to interrupt you. The other thing is we still have the density limitations.
Correct. Yeah, they cannot exceed the density limitations.
Yeah.
So in the next slide, I'm sorry, can you go one more slide? Oh, back one. I think we missed the slide.
Back, PJ?
Back one more.
Back one. Yeah.
Okay. So here I just have three sample properties and what this change would result in. So you see in the RM1 district, which is the lower intensity, what you have in Flamingo Park or in the North Shore Historic District, your typical lot size is 7,500 square feet. With the average unit size or without the average unit size, with the density cap that exists in the comprehensive plan that we're now proposing to change, you end up with 10 units. However, if you do 10 units at 550 square feet, which is the bare minimum, you would end up with a surplus of 2,304 square feet of FAR that you could use for amenities or for other purposes. In all likelihood, you're not going to end up with a building that has all units at 550 square feet because they're not going to be able to use all of their available FAR. So it's just not going to happen. With the RM2, you can get about three more units in with the RM2 district. But you're going to have a surplus of 8,225 square feet of FAR that's not going to be usable. So in all likelihood, nobody's going to build everything at 550 square feet because there's going to be FAR that's available that they're not going to be able to utilize. And then in the RM3 district, this is oceanfront lots, bayfront lots. They're likely not going to be building small units in these locations anyways. But if they were, to build all of their units at 550 square feet, potentially you could get 25 extra units on your typical lot, which is about 47,000 square feet. But they would be giving up 20,962 square feet of FAR. So in all likelihood, they wouldn't do that. However, they could, in the RM3 district, they could potentially take that space for accessory uses, maybe some commercial uses or amenities for the building. So it's very unlikely that anybody's going to be doing a complete building at 550 square feet. But worst case, if you did, in the lower districts, you're not going to end up with more units. RM2, three more units perhaps. RM3, you could get a little more, but it's very unlikely that they're going to be taking advantage of that. So that's it for the average unit size. Next slide, please. So as a proposal for this, one of the recommendations, because we did see some concerns, is to have removing the units, the average unit size, make that optional. And as part of that, the applicant would have to agree to not do short-term rentals on the property via a covenant. So it would be a voluntary program to get rid of the average unit size and provide the city a covenant that they're not going to do short-term rentals. So that was an option that we proposed at the meeting on Wednesday.
So can I? Okay. So back on your first slide then, you're saying that one potential way to deal with the issue is to keep the 800.
Keep the 800.
But then allow somebody to apply for a waiver from that with certain considerations.
Correct.
And go through those? That would be what? No short-term rental?
The primary thing would be no short-term rental, and obviously this would apply anyways. They could not exceed the density in the comprehensive plan. So the primary concern with the smaller unit sizes is that they would become by default short-term rentals. This would ensure that that does not happen.
I don't, Eric. What is the staff? What do you think about that?
I think that the voluntary proffer to give up the short-term rentals is certainly a good move and consistent with what we've been hearing from the neighborhoods. One other thing that we've thought about since we talked about it is, you know, there seemed to be a little bit of concern with the average unit size going away and being just an administrative review. you know, if they're going to avail themselves of not going with the average unit size and just sticking with the minimum, maybe we want to introduce an additional layer of review. Maybe you'd want to send it to planning board to have them take a look at it. Just there's a lot of different ways to get to this, but we want to let the market drive these decisions rather than tie people's hands, because we do, you know, workforce and affordable housing is extremely difficult to achieve. However, there's this other category we call attainable housing, which is more geared towards the young professionals that are not quite at a place in their career where they can afford the luxury units. But we want to draw those people into Miami Beach because that's a feeder pattern for the future residents and young families of Miami Beach.
Well, I was comfortable with it the way it was, but I recognize, I think it's a 5/7 vote, right, that you need.
Yep.
So, you know, I defer to you on this, Chair. It's your item, but it does seem like that this might be a good compromise position. And I also think that there were maybe a couple of people on Wednesday that didn't really understand this particular application.
So I think some folks that were hesitant didn't understand the minimum unit size already exists. That's right. Not actually changing.
Exactly.
So hopefully we can get them comfortable. And I think that concern was a proxy for the real concern, which is short-term rentals. So to the extent that we can get everybody comfortable that we're not opening the door to more short-term rentals in our city, and reasonable restrictions can be put into place, then I think we might get a compromise and maybe get unanimous support for this. So, you know, I'm prepared to send this back to the full commission. It's just the two of us today, and we approved it last time. I think you might want to sit with a couple of the folks that were on the fence and get them comfortable with this, and, you know, hopefully they'll support. Because I think we were close. We had, you know, I think 4.5 votes for this. So I think, you know, if we can at least get the fifth, then we can get this passed.
Okay.
The understory situation.
That was the other issue, right?
So that was the other issue. That's the last slide I have in the PowerPoint. I just have two.
PJ, if you want to pull that up, the last slide.
There we go. So on the left, these are. I just went yesterday. Took homes of houses on Prairie Avenue. The ones on the left can be permitted administratively.
PJ, if you can pull those up.
One more.
The pictures of the homes.
There you go. The homes on the left can be approved administratively. They don't require the approval of the design review board. The one on the right, because it is an understory home, does require the review and approval of the design review board. The one on the right has significant benefits for resiliency purposes. It has more pervious area on the ground level. And it's more in scale in certain respects with the neighboring properties because they didn't have to raise their yard as much as the homes that are permitted by administrative approval. Also those homes, because they have higher yards, they may have more issues with water runoff that the understory home does not. So we think that there's significant benefits to the city in encouraging understory homes, and they can be built in a way that's compatible with the surroundings. But the way our code is structured today, we are encouraging people to go with the administrative option, which is on the left. So we do recommend that
the understory does not count towards FAR?
No, understory homes, they're single-family homes, so that we regulate them by unit size. And the same unit size requirements that we have for a standard home apply to an understory home.
And so the administration is leaning towards trying to encourage more understory homes being built. Better for resiliency, aesthetically. I would, you know, depending on how it's designed, could even look better than some of these other ones. But the problem there is that it going through the DRB process can be very expensive and time consuming, and people want to get their houses built are discouraged from doing that. Yeah,
correct.
Okay.
Right. So if you want to move it back to the commission, I fully support that, and then I would just encourage the staff to meet with a couple of colleagues to try to explain, you know, what we just went through today. And so with that one, I think that one potential compromise is a good one, so I would support that.
Me too, and I think, yeah, if you can sit with a couple of folks who were hesitant and try to walk them through this. I think this presentation was very helpful. So, you know, we might have to do this again at the full commission. Are there any callers?
There are no callers.
Okay, great. All right, I think that concludes today's meeting.
I think we're done.
All right, well, thank you all.
Enjoy your weekend.
Thank you so much.